Welcome to the Sportscast, January 8th, 2019. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Periscope, and iTunes. And if you're listening on iTunes, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. With stunning ease and a freshman quarterback, Clemson toppled college football's greatest dynasty again to become the first perfect playoff champion. Trevor Lawrence passed for 347 yards and three touchdowns, and the second-ranked Tigers beat number one Alabama 44-16 on Monday night in the College Football Playoff National Championship. And to join us to talk to us about it is Tyler Turner. Welcome to the Sportscast.
What up, dude?
Tyler, the game was – it was pretty much owned by Clemson. What were your thoughts about last night's game?
I'm a little distracted because I was looking at like 10 different way too early polls for 2019. You know, we have to look ahead to 2019.
We'll talk about that.
2018 is over.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, going back to the subject, it was a good game. It was a good game if you're a Clemson fan. If you're an Alabama fan, it was a horrible game. What is some hot takes I can make from the game? First off, Trevor Lawrence, true freshman quarterback, I would argue is the best quarterback in college football. I would argue this guy might go down once his career is over as one of the best quarterbacks ever to play college football. Now, it seems a little bit like jumping from A to Z, proverbially from A to Z, but remember this kid was, I shouldn't say remember, just to enlighten people out there, Trevor Lawrence was the number one rated recruit coming out of high school in the 2018 recruiting class. He was number one by 247 Sports. He was number one by Rivals. I think he was two by ESPN. They had Justin Fields number one. But this kid was very highly touted. I remember seeing him at some of the camps. I remember seeing him in the Army All-American game, and a tremendous player, 6'6", can move well, has just an amazing arm, very skilled. He's really mature beyond his years. So it wasn't surprising that he's been so productive, but for him to do what he did as a freshman and to do what he did on the biggest stage for the national title game is nonetheless extremely impressive. So that was my number one kind of thing. From my perspective, there's so many different storylines you could go through, but I would say if I had to do like three storylines, number one would be Trevor Lawrence. He is just an amazing true freshman quarterback, and he basically just played an amazing game. I don't know whatever other adjective to use for his performance. Number two would be, if I had to make a little bit of like correlation between the two staffs, is Dabo Swinney has been able to keep guys like Jeff Scott, Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinators, and Brett Venables on the defense. He's been able to keep them from moving on to basically coaching jobs, better jobs. For whatever reason, these guys have stayed with Dabo Swinney for, I don't know, I'm not looking at how long they've been there right now. I'm not looking at a sheet, but they've been there for quite a while. I know through their 4 or 5 years of making the college football playoff, they've been there. And it hasn't been like that for Alabama. You had a totally different staff last year. You know, Jeremy Pruitt was the defensive coordinator. A couple of years before that, it was Kirby Smart. On the offensive side, you had, you know, Lane Kiffin a couple of years ago. Then you had Sarkisian for a brief second take it over. Then you had, then you have Mike Locksley, and then you had the guy who is now the Bills offensive coordinator, Brian. So you've just had a lot of different coordinators coming in and out of there. Well, you've just had this consistency on Dabo Swinney's staff. And also, you don't see a lot of guys for Alabama come back for their senior year. That could be first-round draft picks.
Yeah, that's correct.
Whereas you saw like Christian Wilkinson and Celine Farrell, two first round guys probably last year, come back and play their senior year. So the fact that you have players coming back, you have coaches coming back, just tells you how strong the culture is with Clemson and the consistency of having the same coordinators every single year. Brandon Streeter, who was one of my coaches at Liberty, has been the quarterback's coach and recruiting coordinator for like 5-6 years at Clemson. And just that consistency and that culture to go along with just the amazing play of a freshman quarterback and Trevor Lawrence is probably the two biggest things I saw. And I just saw, honestly, a better Clemson team beat Alabama. And I know everyone thought Alabama was one of the greatest teams ever, but I think you saw playing double, they weren't as good as Clemson. And I don't know if they played 10 times, you know, the ball can turn different ways, but, they weren't good on that night. Not last night, they weren't even close as good. I mean, the game wasn't even close. It was a blowout.
Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa threw two crucial interceptions in the first half. The first returned 44 yards for a touchdown by A.J. Terrell to put Clemson up 7-0. The Tide came in scoring 48 points per game, but were shut out over the final 44 minutes by an opportunistic Clemson defense that stiffened in key spots. Do you think their defense stopped Tagovailoa really well?
Yeah, I mean, Brett Venables called a great game. He that defensive line obviously got after him. And I hate to be the same drum I've been saying for the last several weeks is 70 is four best defenses he's played against. His total numbers are 71 for 122, about 230 yards per game. He's completed 58% of his passes. He's had six touchdowns to six interceptions. With Tua is he's accurate. He's very precise when he knows where he's going with the ball. But if that initial target is not open, and I've noticed he's gotten pressure, he either gets sacked or he tends to try to make a play that is not even there. Like that second interception, even the first one, but the second one.
Is the internet shut off? Sorry, guys. Let me get back here and try to get this guy, get Tyler called back. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
No, I think it was me. I had like all these people call me. I had like three different phone calls coming in.
An important person.
Okay, anyways, go. Okay, what was going on? What was I talking about?
Yeah, you were talking about Clemson's defense, how well they did against Tua.
I don't think that's what I was talking about.
No,
I think I moved on from that.
Yeah, you did.
Unless I lost. Was I talking about Tua?
Yeah, about Tua doesn't work well under pressure or against good defenses.
The basic point of what I was saying, and I hate when it gets interrupted because I don't know where I was.
Yeah.
Tua is very precise. He's very accurate when his first read is there. When it's not there, and especially if you get any pressure on him, I could tell he gets uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Meaning like first read, let's say, I don't know what they call a dig route to the slot. And then all of a sudden he's there. There you go. Throws a dig route to the slot. Normally, his five-star receivers of Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, blah, 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 and Kevin Knox, whatever his name is. Irv Smith. Normally, his really talented receiving tight end and running back core is open. So, you know, his first read snaps it off to them. He's accurate. Here we go. First down, touchdown, whatever. When it's not there, I noticed he does a couple of things. He gets a little panic a little bit when he gets pressured, and sometimes he'll just throw it. He'll just chuck it, and you saw that on the one play where it got intercepted and run back for pick six. Well, actually, that one he didn't. He actually went for his first read. The guy just wasn't open. The play was read by the corner. The corner intercepted it and ran back for touchdown. It was more the second interception where he, like, his read wasn't there, so he kind of panicked, so he just threw it anyway. And obviously, the only guy that was there was a safety, and he just went back, picked it off, ran it back 50 yards. And he did that a couple times against Georgia. I saw him do it once against LSU, where his read wasn't there, he got a little bit of pressure, and he's like, screw it, and he just throws it anyway. And then there's literally his guy's like, is not even there. I mean, it's not even in the vicinity. Obviously, sometimes there can just be a great play by a defensive player, and then sometimes it's just like, what the heck is the quarterback thinking? Well, a couple throws I've seen, saw one for sure in the Georgia game, I saw one for sure in the Clemson game, I saw one in the LSU game, where two of it, the guy, like, no one was there. He just threw it, and it was intercepted.
You think part
so that obviously completely that completely falls on the quarterback.
You think the part of the success also for Clemson last night were their wide receivers?
For Clemson, oh yeah, sure. Their wide receiver core played a very good game. Justin Ross, the true freshman, was awesome. T. Higgins, I think he's a sophomore now. He was terrific. Oh yeah, the receiving core is very good.
Where do you lead this Alabama squad for next year? You think they'll be as strong? We know that Tua is returning next year. Do you think this? You know, you would think this core will be back to the national championship next year.
Do I think Alabama will be back to the national championship?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, dude. I mean, it's a little early. I mean, yes, they're going to be probably in all the way too early polls. I actually, most are putting Clemson number one because obviously they're defending champion, but there's actually a couple that are putting Alabama number one. I think if Clemson loses all the defensive line, they like literally lose their whole starting off defensive line.
Wow.
So I think that they're going to be the top two teams coming into the year. Alabama still returns tons of talent. Remember, they have the most talented. Clemson kind of has an argument. I was going to say Alabama has by far the most talented wide receiving core in college football, but I think Justin Ross, T. Higgins and company at Clemson are like, hold your horse on that one. And I think Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback in college football. So it's probably close between those two. But Alabama still has one of the best receiving cores. They obviously have a great running back. Josh Jacobs, I think, is maybe the best running back in college football. If not, he's top three. And still a great offensive line. So, yeah, Alabama will be good next year. I do wonder what they're going to do. You know, they lose Mike Locksley. So they're going to be on a fourth offensive coordinator in three seasons or four seasons, whatever that is.
That's correct. Yeah.
Fourth in four seasons. Couldn't be in three. So it's four. So another offensive coordinator. And Tosh Lapoy got the defensive coordinator job. He's a tremendous recruiter. He usually wins recruiter of the year. I don't think his defense was as good. Mm. I think they took a step back. And the problem with that is, they didn't take a step back as regards of talent. They still have four or five star guys roaming that defensive side of the ball. This was not one of the best defenses by Saban. It wasn't even close. It was actually probably one of his, not saying it's a bad defense, but for Saban, it was one of his worst defenses. I mean, Saban always has great defenses. So I wonder if he does something at the defensive coordinator position. I don't know. We'll see.
But though he did have his best offense ever, I think, ever.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now,
there's a lot of talent that title.
From the polls from this past week, what is the projection for 2019? What have you been reading?
Well, I'm keeping track of the Ducks because seeing where they're ranked. There's been one, two. Athlon Sports had a poll, Sporting News had a poll, 247 Sports had a poll, ESPN had a poll, USA Today, Sports Illustrated, Mercury News is the ones that I keep track of. Do you have a question about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like,
what do you mean? What is that question? What do you mean?
Well, my question is, like, what teams are you seeing in the top 10? Do you see, I mean, are you seeing, like, the same teams pretty much, or who's been pulling number one in most of the polls?
Well, I already talked about that. It's Alabama or Clemson's number one.
Oh, okay. So they're still favorites. Okay.
I think Clemson is, but would you want to talk about other teams?
Yeah.
You have to ask
the what other teams?
I don't know where to go with it.
What other teams have you seen that are, like, new that could, you know, be a good contender for next year?
Well, Oregon.
Right.
You want to go by my team. My Oregon was Athlon Sports has them 12. Sporting News has them 13th. 247 Sports has them 9. ESPN has them 12. USA Today has them 11. Sports Illustrated has them 10. And Mercury News has them 9. So you have them either rated right outside the top 10 or right inside the top 10. And so I think Oregon is the team. I think almost everyone has them being the favorite in the Pac-12. Washington, who has been pretty much they've won two of the three last back. Two out of the last three. Man, I can't talk today. I don't know what's wrong with me. Anyway,
that's okay.
Two out of the last three Pac-12 titles have been won by the Washington Huskies. And then the other year, they made the New Year's Six. USC won 2 years ago. And the Washington, but Washington as a whole, and it's looking at it from a holistic approach, has been the best team in the Pac-12 over the last three seasons. That's not saying a lot. But this year, it looks as if Oregon is going to come in as the favorite. Washington loses their starting quarterback, four-year starter Jake Browning. They lose four-year starter and all-time leading rusher Miles Gaskins. They also lose most of their key contributors on defense. Byron Murphy is probably going to be a first-round pick. Tyler Rapp is going to probably go early in the draft. Ben Burkervin, who led the team in tackles. So I think Washington's taking a little bit of a dip. And Oregon bring back 10 starters on offense, about 7 or 8 on defense, and obviously have the top recruiting class coming in from this cycle. They had the second-best recruiting class from last cycle. So I think Oregon is a team that my team, the Ducks, the loves of my life, are the team that are probably an off-the-radar because they're not even finishing in the top 25 for the final poll this year. The AP came out and Oregon wasn't even in the top 25.
Wow.
So that's a team outside of the top 25. A couple other teams that I've seen that are getting some preseason hype is Texas. Texas, obviously, was 10-4 last year. They runner up in the Big 12. They ended up going to the Sugar Bowl. They upset Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. I'm seeing them in a lot of top 10s. I'm seeing Florida, who will finish the year really strong, with a victory over Michigan in, was it the Peach Bowl, I believe. I'm seeing them in a lot of top 10s. You know, you obviously see Georgia in top 10s. You're seeing Ohio State. You're seeing Oklahoma. I see Michigan bordering around the top 10. I'm seeing Notre Dame bordering around the top 10. Who else is there?
How about LSU?
Top 10, top 15. Yeah, they're in the top 10. I've seen them in top 10. I think one person even had them as high as 3.
Wow.
I've seen, So basically, Clemson's the only team that I'm seeing towards the top in the ACC. The SEC has Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Florida. Oh, Texas A&M. I'm seeing Texas A&M in top 10, top 15. Now, the only thing is, it's like, come on, like, the SEC, they get so hyped up and everyone's like, they're the best conference ever. The SEC was 6-6.
Yeah.
The SEC in the bowl season was not that great. Teams that were outside of the top 25 beat SEC teams that are in the top 25. Iowa beat Mississippi State. Oklahoma State, who was 6-6, beat Missouri. I don't know. Texas beat Georgia. So I just kind of get a little bit nauseated each year, like even all these way too early top 25. You have like 5-6 teams from the SEC. You have like one team from the Pac-12, one team from the ACC. You have like two teams from the Big 12. And and like two teams from the Big Ten. SEC gets six in there. Well, if the SEC is so amazing top to bottom, why are they 6-6 in the bowl games? That's kind of been the last couple of years. They're not even the. I think they finished, I believe, if my numbers are correct, I think ACC, Big Ten, and Big 12 all finished with over 500 in the bowl games. SEC with 500, yet SEC is suddenly the best conference. I mean, I do realize they get per the recruiting rankings, they do get the best classes when you break down the classes. But I'm sorry, the results on the field show that it's a lot more even than obviously recruiting rankings and preseason rankings give it. So, anyway,
they're at least in the top two, though.
Who's the least in the top two?
SEC.
Least in the top two of what?
The best conference, the best conference in the country. The top conferences in the country.
Based on what?
I mean, you know, based on recruiting, based on, you know, performance.
Recruiting is not. No, it's not based on performance. How can you make that argument?
Okay. Bowl games? Okay.
No. Bowl games, they weren't. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but also being ranked in the college football playoff rankings.
Yeah, because you mean because they're put there? Because people put them there?
Paid them there?
Okay. Because people subjectively continue to put SEC at the top in preseason rankings and college football rankings? Yeah, I agree. They are there because people subjectively keep on putting them there. But how come when it comes to the holistic outlook of how the results end up on the field, especially when it comes to bowl season, how come they do not necessarily finish first?
It's a debate that everyone's asking about. That's why they want to increase it to 8. But I've been hearing there was yesterday's news about one of the committee members saying, "Oh, it'll be a while till we'll get 8 teams in the playoffs." He said so, whatever that means.
Yeah, I kind of like it the way it is. To be honest with you, I agree with him. I like it the way it is.
Yeah, I think it should be 6.
I think
8,
4 is good.
But we'll see. Maybe, you know, because if
I know you made that silly argument. 6 is just so basically the top 2 teams get an extra week.
Get a bye week.
So the other guys can go out there.
Yeah,
so the other teams could go out there and maybe get some key players injured,
like
so then it even is the worst game. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
No, I don't agree with that.
Yesterday, Dwayne Haskins declared for the NFL. Do you think he'll be the top quarterback picked for the NFL draft next season, next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think he will. I do. I think he will be the top. I think him and Daniel Jones and probably Drew Lock are the three that go in the first round.
How about Will Greer?
I think it's a stream. No. You always ask me him, too. I'm never going to change my mind. No, he's not. No, he's a third-round guy.
We got some West Virginia fans that listen to the show, and they always want you to say something, you know, positive things about Will Greer, but.
No, it's probably Ryan Christie, isn't it?
No, it's actually some nominous West Virginia fans.
Oh, okay. It's Ryan Christie because Greer used to be a Florida quarterback. No, they're real Greer. I'm sorry, they're West Virginia fans.
And unusual news: University of Houston hires Holgorsen as their head coach. Were you surprised about that move?
I've been hearing he wanted out of West Virginia. His name had been floated around for too many jobs for there not to be some legs to that. So, no, actually I'm not. I kind of was expecting for him to – I mean, obviously he's going from Power 5 to non-Power 5, which is kind of, you know, unusual. But I just don't think he necessarily wanted to be around West Virginia because of the contract problems he had. And, yeah, he walked. So, I guess good for him. It was good for him. But to go back to the question, I kind of left it hanging a little bit, I felt like. I do think that Dwayne Haskins is going to be the first quarterback taken. I do not think this is an extremely strong quarterback draft. I just think everyone's like 2020 is just going to be, that's the year you get like the big time quarterbacks, right? You're hearing, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, Jake Fromm. But I'm going to tell people to slow their horses, like slow it down, relax a little bit, because there's a lot of questions. Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, and Jake Fromm. Tua, like I said, when it came to playing against defenses with pulse, his numbers dipped significantly. When his first read wasn't there, you saw him taking chances that in many circumstances were just foolish. Jake Fromm is good. He's an accurate passer. I think he's a skilled guy. But at times, look how he played in the second half against Bama. Look how he played against LSU. Look how he played against Texas. I saw when his team was not really playing inspired, when his team, maybe the wheels were coming off, he didn't necessarily make plays to change trajectory. I saw that he kind of went, if things started going south, he kind of went south with it. He started missing passes. He started not necessarily stepping up. So I think there's a step he needs to make. And then Justin Herbert, same thing. You know, you saw inconsistencies in his play. You saw when he got pressured, he'd panic in the pocket and he overthrowing and misfiring a little bit. And, you know, he definitely had some issues with the receivers dropping balls. I think it was something like 47 drop passes, which I think led to Power 5 for extra drop passes at the wide receiver position for Justin Herbert. So, I mean, some of that's not his fault. But at the same time, there's definitely some growth he needs to make. Especially I noticed when he got pressured, you would see him, you know, just kind of panic, and you'd see mistakes kind of get materialized out of some pressure. And so I think he'll need to maybe slow the roll in the 2020 draft. I think it's better than this year. I think. Hey, hold on one second, honey.
That's okay.
Okay. 2020, go back. Sorry. every podcast I have to deal with my kids.
It's okay.
Anyway,
does not mind.
You're annoying me. Okay. So it's not okay. Anyway, but when I'm annoyed, I don't like it. Okay. But anyways, going back to what I was saying. So I just think that there's some question marks with, all of the top end quarterbacks 2020. So I think people like kind of rolling the dice saying that this year's super marginal with the group of quarterbacks, and next year is where people really are going to make their money and they're going to get that big time QB. I think there's still a lot of question marks with the 2020 quarterback class. If you were to ask me today, of all the quarterbacks in college football, and I'm a professional franchise, and actually I heard one scout, I read the report somewhere, where one scout says, which quarterback would I take? I would take Trevor Lawrence. But he can't go. He's a true freshman. He can't go. He's not eligible to be in the draft for two more years. But if you talk about size, arm talent, athletic ability, skills, the mental makeup of a quarterback, I think he's the best quarterback in college football. So the best quarterback is not going to be eligible until the 2021 draft. I think all of the quarterbacks, whether it be Dwayne Haskins, Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, Ryan Finley, the guys this year, or the guys in 2020, to the Jake Fromms, the Jacob Eason's, the Justin Herberts, the Tua Tagovailoa's, the KG Costellas, I think all of them do some good things, but they also make some pretty obvious mistakes, and there's definitely some serious growth, and I don't think they are can't miss prospects. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I just think how great the draft is going to be for quarterbacks in 2020. That kind of narrative that kind of has been out there, I think that might need to slow down a little bit.
Hold your horses.
You're going to have to see. I think you're going to have to see some considerable growth when it comes to Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa, and Jake Fromm, Jacob Eason, KJ Costello, all the ones that are supposedly going to be in the 2020 draft.
But it will be bigger than the 2018 draft, you think?
I think the upside is better. I think guys with, I think the upside of Justin, like a Justin Herbert for sure. I'm not just saying this because I'm an Oregon fan, but you know, his size, his arm talent, the athleticism for a guy his size. I think the natural ability of someone like Herbert is someone that is a higher ceiling than anyone, especially in the 2019 draft.
Right.
I don't know about Tua. We'll see. Tua is kind of what he is.
Next year will be a lot. He's not a whole lot to measure on him next year.
Because he's already a little bit diminutive in size, and he's already his ceiling I don't think is as high as like a Herbert. It's not as high. He just doesn't have quite the physical, talent. He's not as tall, and he's not as big, and he probably doesn't have as strong as arm. Tua's not another thing about Tua is he's not an outrageous athlete. You know what I'm saying? Like, some people have compared him to Russell Wilson. He's not as good an athlete as Russell Wilson. He's not that fast. Like, Russell can really run. Russell's a sub-4.6 guy, super shifty. Tua can move. He's definitely athletic, but he's not like an outrageous athlete.
Yeah, which no one has replicated Russell Wilson. No one has ever followed his footsteps, playing professionally.
I think some people thought that Marcus Mariota would, but no, Mariota hasn't. I think part of the problem is I don't think Mariota quite has the size of like Wilson. Wilson's a really stout guy; he's really well built. Whereas a little smaller frame is Mariota. And Mariota, I don't even know if he has quite as strong an arm as Wilson. So no one has. And I know Tua's name in comparison to Wilson's been kind of thrown out there. Or you've seen Tua with Drew Brees too, but at the same time, he just needs to make better decisions with the ball. I mean, can't be throwing fly patterns when there's no receiver there. I think he did that in the Georgia game, and I know he did that last night in Clemson. So, yeah, we'll see.
The verdict is to be determined with Tua next year. USC Cliff Kingsbury to interview for multiple NFL head coaching jobs. He was blocked by USC for a bit, but now they're letting him. What do you think about this situation here?
Well, first off, if a guy is a coordinator and he has the opportunity to interview for a head coaching job, especially when it's a head coaching job in the NFL, to try to block him from that is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's coordinator to head coach, even if it's in college. I mean, you let a coordinator interview for, I don't know what's going on around there, but I believe he'll probably get some kind of offer in the NFL. And I believe he'll be leaving USC. I just don't see that at USC is not in a great situation. Anyways, they have a coach who probably shouldn't have even kept his job, and I think the writing's on the wall. I think Cliff Kingsbury will be probably getting a job somewhere in the NFL, and I think he'll be out of USC.
Yesterday, Green Bay Packers hired Matt LaFleur. He was the offensive coordinator for the Titans. Are you happy about that decision?
Well, there's so many different reactions out there. Some hate it. Some, I guess, don't mind it. It's all over the place. It
wasn't sexy.
Long story short, no, it wasn't sexy. Guy has never been a head coach. He did coach under Sean McVay. I believe he started his career under Brian Kelly. He had a couple different stops under Brian Kelly. So he's coached under some good coaches. Obviously, McVay is considered one of the better offensive minds. He coached under him, who's his offensive coordinator. Didn't do a whole lot this year at you got a message.
I didn't see.
Dude, shut up. Okay, anyways. Paul Feinbaum. He's insufferable.
He's probably listening.
No, he's not listening. He said that Paul Feinbaum – look, I'm going to repeat what he said. Feinbaum said that Bama still has better team and better players, and you'll see that on draft day. Okay, Paul Feinbaum. Like, does Paul Feinbaum follow any other conference but the SEC? He's terrible.
That means anyway, argument to be made. Anyways, go ahead about Matt LaFleur.
He's a joke. Okay, no, I think it's a solid hire. He's a good, he's an offensive guy. We need more offense. We have the best quarterback in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers. I heard he's also going to keep Patini, the defensive coordinator, around. He's also maybe going to keep some other staff in place. I think it's, you know what, we'll see. We'll see. You know, it's not a sexy hire. It's not a big name,
but you're optimistic.
Who they hired, they interviewed like everyone and their dog. So, I mean,
they got it done early. I think he was the first hire this offseason.
Yeah, but you do remember they fired McCarthy with like 4 or 5 games left in the season.
Yeah, so they're probably looking at people. I mean,
they had
sense.
A way head start when it came to the coaching search. They had already interviewed like 5 or 6 guys prior to the season ending. Like Jim Caldwell, they had interviewed, and they did interviewed Bruce Arians. I think they interviewed Chuck Pagano. They had interviewed a lot of people. Yeah, they had interviewed a lot of people.
They didn't interview Adam Gase, and I don't think.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, the Packers. Yep. That was after the season, though. After the season, they interviewed Gase. They interviewed whoever the New Orleans offensive coordinator is. I can't remember his name right now.
Campbell?
I think they actually interviewed. They interviewed the Rams offensive coordinator. They interviewed Bieniemy, the Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator. They interviewed mostly offensive guys.
For
very few defensive.
For New Orleans?
I think they did one or two defensive guy coordinators, but they did almost all offensive guys. Yeah, maybe him. So, like, it was almost all offense. It was a couple defensive guys, and then they decided LaFleur. So,
yeah, I think we'll see what happens. I guess maybe the McDaniels didn't really work out for some reason.
Yeah, that too. It seemed the writing seemed to be on the wall, and everyone was thinking it was going to be McDaniels, and all of a sudden it didn't. And I wonder if McDaniels was leaning towards taking Cleveland. We'll see.
I'm telling you, man, that Cleveland team looks good to coach. Young and Baker, the potential he has. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
I think that too. I think you might be right. I think actually that maybe is where McDaniels goes. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
I don't know if I can see Belichick going, but now Belichick's going to retire with the Patriots. It's just, I don't see him moving anywhere.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Anyways.
Well, they just did a 4-year deal.
Yeah.
Before it was a 4-year deal. Okay.
So the Bears lost this past weekend by a miss by Cody Parkey. What were your thoughts about that game?
It was a great game, a very entertaining game. The Bears should have won. He missed 2 kicks in that game, right?
Correct.
I believe he missed 2 field goals. Yep. So make one of those, they win. And I think as a whole, they outplayed the Eagles, but at the end of the day, the Eagles got it done. They won. Nick Foles continues on with his playoff mastery, and there you go. A tough loss by Bears.
Which there was a video that they think Trevor, they think Trayvon Hester blocked it or touched it a little bit. Do you think he did that or?
Oh, I didn't see it.
Okay,
I don't have anything to say. Yeah, I didn't
okay.
See it.
Well, yeah, there is a video that you see on Twitter and YouTube. I have not heard any comments from Hester for some reason, but we'll see what happens. By Trayvon Hester. He's a defensive tackle. But
okay.
Anyways, ready for some predictions. Anything else before predictions?
I don't know when we're obviously, well, we're probably going to be going over the NFL, but
yeah.
Definitely whenever we, let's continue to follow the coaching searches.
We will.
Whether it be NFL, but also college, could be adding a lot of, there's been a lot of coordinator moves, a lot of position coaches moving, a lot of movement there. So keep an eye on that. Also, be keeping an eye on late signing period for the teams. So keep an eye, keep close eye, San Diego, watch me.
I will.
But keep an eye on just who finishes strong for the late signing period. Three-fourths of the guys signed in the early signing period, but there's still a lot of good names out there, and let's see who finishes this class off strong. And I'm going to be doing some number crunching. I'll probably send you the numbers on how the rosters look to be shaken out. And my Ducks are definitely we'll see how we finish off this year, but it looks as if we could add a couple more really key pieces, and along with maybe possibly have a couple guys transfer out, maybe some good guys transfer in. I think the Ducks are going to have one of the better bumps in talent on in college football. Actually,
Left out there in the open?
For big names,
yeah, like anyone, you know, a couple of players out there that haven't declared, but they're, you know, still in the open, or the big names have already signed already.
Okay, you're asking me a couple different questions. Are you asking me about big names declaring for the draft, or are you asking me about big names signing prospect signing? Which question are you asking?
With prospect signings.
Is there any big prospects who haven't signed yet?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. There's a few. There's. I'm not looking at it offhand, but I know there's probably, I don't know, 10 top 50 prospects who haven't signed. I know that Alabama is pretty loaded up with their class. I do know they're in the running for a couple more guys.
As usual,
the one guy to keep an eye on is Oregon is looking for another defensive back for their class, and Alabama has a commitment from Christian Williams. He's an Alabama kid, but it doesn't look as if he's probably going to end up part of the Alabama class, and he might be flipping somewhere. And I know his last trip is to Oregon. Ooh. So that could be a good
keep an eye on that.
Oregon.
So the late signing will be till February, right? Will be like the last month.
Yeah, I think it's February. I think it's February 5th. So it'll be late signing. And then remember, there's still some guys that you're waiting on to see if they declare for the draft,
which also plays a part as well.
Yeah, I know Oregon's waiting on. They have one guy left. Troy Dye, he's been a three-year starter. He's been their leading tackler for the last 3 years. He plays inside and outside linebacker. And I know that he is, like, on the fence. He has I don't know when the deadline is, but I think the deadline's here in, like, a week. Well, I think the deadline is in, like, 5-6 days. He has 5-6 days to decide if he's going to leave or not. And so that will be a big if they lose him – the only thing I'll say about Oregon is there's a couple things to say. There is some rumblings. I don't want to go too far with this, but the Jim Leavitt might be leaving Oregon. I've said that. I'm not gonna go too far into that.
How much of a negative will that be if that does happen?
Okay, it depends on who you hear. I mean, Jim Leavitt's considered to be one of the better defensive coordinators. He's the third highest paid defensive coordinator in college football, but the rumors are that he has not really gotten along with the staff. He was more of the negative than a positive this year as far as the team dynamics went. So if you're hearing from that premise, maybe him leaving is better. But I have a hard time seeing one of the better defensive coordinators leaving being a good thing. And if Troy Dye does leave, then Oregon is on the defensive side of the ball, losing pretty much their four most productive players. They graduated just Jalen Jelks. They graduated Justin Hollins. They graduated Ugo Amadi. If they also graduated Kalano Opelo. So if they also lose Troy Dye, they would be losing a lot of production as far as tackles, interceptions, and sacks, and guys making plays. So I think, if they also lose their defensive coordinator, that would be the one question mark more than anything is the defensive side of the ball take a little bit of a step back. Now they've recruited very well. They're bringing in a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. But at the end of the day, freshmen and sophomores are freshmen and sophomores. It takes years to develop, whether it be in the weight room, whether it be skills on the field. So even if you have really talented freshmen and sophomores, they're still freshmen and sophomores. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. They're still in the same class.
No, that's not what I mean.
They're going to stay in the same pool.
It has nothing to do with them.
Okay. sorry.
No, what am I saying? Do you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, no, you say you know what I'm saying, then you're like saying they're in the same class. What am I saying?
I guess not. Okay.
No, tell me what I'm saying.
Okay, what I'm saying, freshman and sophomore, they're still in development. They're still working now. They're still not in their prime, pretty much.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There you go. That is what I'm saying. So basically, you take a really good junior and senior, he is more than likely still going to be better than a more talented freshman sophomore. You understand what I'm saying?
Correct.
It's just because he's experienced, he's mature, it's a 22-year-old man versus a 19-year-old man. There's just maturity and there's development. And so even if you're having, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau, the number one player, and then you have all these guys that are big time, five-star recruits starting on your defensive side of the ball, they still are freshmen. And they're still, I would say, they're going to have inconsistencies. They're still going to make freshman mistakes because they are just 18, 19-year-old kids. So the fact that they're going to be younger next year, and if they also have to break in a new defensive coordinator and stuff, the defensive side of the ball would be a little more of a question mark than I'd like for Oregon. And we've never been known for defense either. So, but the offensive side of the ball, now we did lose Dylan Mitchell, our best receiver. And when I mean best, by far our best, yeah, he's gone. So, but at the same time, you're bringing, you know, we've brought in a lot of big, we've signed two really good classes as far as receivers. You are bringing back five or six other top pass catchers, whether it be tight ends, running backs, or wide receivers. That experience to go along with the talent, there's kind of a nice mix that goes on. You're also bringing back your two leading rushers. You're bringing back all your offensive linemen, like literally all five starters, plus two other guys who are backups that started at least one game last year. And you're bringing in a top 100 four-star kid and a All-American number one rated offensive lineman in the junior college level. So the offensive line is in good position. You're bringing back a four-year starter at quarterback. You're bringing back your two leading rushers, and you're still bringing back your five, six top pass catchers at the wide receiver and tight end position. So on offense, you like where they stand. They're also not going to be very much movement in the staff when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. I like Oregon offensively. Defensively, I think it's a little more of a question mark, whether it be losing some upperclassmen, having mostly freshmen, sophomores, a couple juniors starting, and then maybe possibly a new defensive coordinator. You maybe are going to see a little bit of a regression on the defensive side. Maybe. We'll see.
We'll see what happens. Oregon's exciting. I like Mark Cristobal. Been learning more about him, even though I'm from Miami. But, you know, going through Miami, going through Alabama, now Oregon. Oregon should be very lucky to have him. Miami could not afford him, or they just didn't want to spend $10 million. They should have for the championship. But Oregon is looking good. They're sitting pretty. And hopefully that will reflect in the rankings. Are you ready for predictions?
Yep.
All right. Let's go for the Colts at the Chiefs.
I'm going to go Chiefs.
Chiefs, okay. Cowboys at the Rams.
I'm going to go Rams.
Rams win. So far, he's picking the favorites. Chargers at the Patriots.
Chargers.
Chargers. That's the first upset by Tyler. Phil Rivers wins in New England finally. And finally, Eagles at Saints, the biggest game this weekend, people are saying.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Saints. I think Saints are better. And the Eagles, Cinderella run ends.
Yeah, we'll see how far they can go. But Nick Foles, is he better than Wentz?
I mean, he's been good in the playoffs. We'll see.
Just a playoff.
I still like Carson Wentz. I think Carson Wentz is good. Remember, he had ACL surgery.
Yes.
I don't know if he completely healed from that. It usually takes about a year and some change. So I think that affected some of his production.
And he also has a bad back right now. And random question, soup, do you eat it or drink it?
I don't really do either. I'm not a big soup guy, but I would eat it.
And what's your favorite soup?
Vegetable.
Chicken bowl? You said
vegetable.
What was that? Sorry.
Vegetable.
Oh, vegetable soup. That is a good one. Most soups are salty, so they're all pretty good.
They're all pretty good.
Anyways, Tyler, how can people talk to you about, you know, Oregon recruiting, or talk about Matt LaFleur, the new coach of Green Bay?
Tyler Turner, Minneapolis.
Awesome. MPLS. And I guess you'll be watching more NFL this weekend, I guess.
Yep.
Should be excited when divisional playoffs this weekend. We'll see who comes out of it. And we'll definitely look at recruiting. Recruiting never ends until February ends. And then we'll look at rankings and what's going on in the college football world.
I'll be keeping you up to date on SportsCast.
Very. It is. I mean, I never got into recruiting until this year. I mean, I've heard rumblings, but never got more in depth. And I really understand it more. Like, if you don't have a good recruiting class, you're not going to do well in the season.
No. And I said I'll probably talk about on a SportsCast. We can maybe dictate. That's not the right word. We can have one specifically on recruiting and numbers and just how the trajectory of certain programs and how certain programs are on the upswing because of recruiting. I'd say the programs right now to really look at as far as recruiting that are, you should probably see some successful results on the field, or you should, is like Texas has been very good. Texas A&M has been very good. You've seen a lot. Oklahoma continues to recruit at a high level on the offensive side of the ball. Let's see if they can turn it around to the defense a little bit more. Oregon has been very good recruiting. Other than that, it's kind of the same old, same old. You know,
For sure we'll have a podcast over this because people don't understand it, why these programs do so well, because they have a good recruitment department. And not just one guy going to high schools. No, there's probably a whole staff. So
Yeah, in some cases it's literally the whole staff shows up for one kid. Sure, so.
And a call by the coach at the end, just to seal the deal.
Amen.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on to the SportsCast.
Thanks, dude.